Welcome back, everybody. It's nice to see you all again, or a lot of you anyway. When I saw the registrations, it's great to see so many familiar faces from last time. So, you know why you're here for the topic. So, in terms of the agenda today, these are the things to keep an eye out over the next probably 15 or 20 minutes. I think I originally had 25 minutes to take you through this, but I think now I'll do it in something like 15 to 20. But essentially, I want to start off talking about what we see as three mega trends, which are really starting to impact everything that's going on in just about every industry and every country on the planet. Then I want to take you through what we're calling the six imperatives, so from the title slide. And they're really the battlefronts, if you like, to think about how we can start thinking about changing our businesses to move forward into the future. And then I'd like to leave you with some thoughts about thinking about how best to plan the way ahead. So it's sort of like a bingo game when you sort of keep an eye out for the three, keep an eye out for the six, and then see if you can keep an eye out for the topic of planning the way forward. So the first mega trend, I want to start today's session where we finished in January. So this was sort of where we ended up in our conversation talking about sustainability and some of the change in January. The first mega trend is this concept of digital unification. And this is the pressure that's sort of going on in the world where traditional technology, traditional IT is sort of coming together with traditional asset and engineering spaces, so those businesses that are responsible for the roads and the transport systems and the buildings, the whole built environment of the planet. And then you can add on these concepts of digital reality, and so all those conversations we've had in the last 12 months to 24 months about metaverses and going back even further, talking about augmented reality and virtual reality and spatial technologies, and then this whole concept of existential realities, which has really taken over our strategies and mindsets over the last couple of years. And so sustainability is an example of this existential reality that we're trying to get on top of. We're trying to get on top of equality in many forms, whether that's workforce equality or gender equality. We're trying to overcome population challenges. We're trying to overcome energy crises. We've never been at a point before in history where we're trying to solve so many existential reality problems. Now, when you add these four things together, the commonality or the black hole that's pulling them together is this concept of digital data. You can't have traditional digital infrastructure or IT without talking about data. That's all it's about. You can't talk about digital engineering in the forms of you cannot create digital twins of airplanes and buildings and cities without data. You cannot have a metaverse without some kind of data lake and data environment. And equally, sustainability for most organisations has been about the measurement of carbon credits up till now, but sustainability from a United Nations SDG perspective covers more than 30 categories that require measurement and data and things like that. What's important then, once we understand that this digital data black hole that has been created, is you think, well, what do we have to change in our business to help us manage and survive today? And we see really three key disruption opportunities. The first is that the spending in technology is higher in non-traditional IT buckets than it now is in IT. So there is more spending in the digital engineering side of countries and industries right across the planet. There is more spending in digital reality technologies, and there's certainly more spending in the existential technologies than there is collectively in IT. And so what we're seeing is a pull away. And when you look at institutional level investments and venture capital investments and just banking and financial and capital market investments, they are coming in from the right, not from the left. That is a change we haven't seen before, and that is one of the key outcomes of this trend. The second is that we are seeing these things really drive the requirement for new scalable infrastructures. And so we've always talked about cloud for cloud's sake, and I've always felt we've talked about it without the context of why. This is the context of why. We cannot actually deliver the exponential requirements for this trend without having the necessary infrastructure and application environments in place. So now things like cloud or everything that has been born on the cloud, whether it's software as a service or platform as a service or whatever it is now really important. And we will continue to see exponential growth in that space, but not for the sake of cloud. Cloud is the transition, as has been a transition stage for the last 10 years to get us to this point, which is doing interesting things with cloud. And then the final opportunity for this disruption is that the decision making for these things is now sitting elsewhere in the organisation. So if you are a technology supplier or you are a sitting CIO, then you know this concept of shadow IT that we've sort of talked about for more than a decade, it's not shadow IT anymore. It's a new normal. You know, and these are sort of, so there's wonderful opportunities there in thinking about who these new IT procurement digital executives are. And they could be, certainly if I think about some of the examples that we've been involved in, it could be the chief scientist for a biosecurity agency or anything like that. So it could be a chief engineer or not even a chief engineer, just an asset engineer of a particular asset class within a government department or an engineering firm. So a really significant trend there to think about. The second one is this concept of economic transformation. And so for the last 100 years, we have really been focused on an economic model which has been defined by two things, and one thing primarily, which is this concept of the labour theory of value. So I work a day, you pay me for a day's wages based on an hourly sort of, you know, what the value of my labour is. And the whole world has sort of evolved like that. And if you think about the way Asia has evolved as a technology hub, especially in the last 20 to 30 years, when we think about the massive rise in BPO and offshoring and things like that, that has been on the back of cheap labour and the labour theory of value economics too, which basically says it's cheaper here to do it than it is in the US or Europe. And so we've seen this massive push. The other thing has been cheap money, and there's been cheap money in the world for the past 30 years. And the cheap money is drying up as a number of pressures are sort of coming to bear. Some of them is the rising middle class, which is sort of putting increasing pressure, so as those living standards starts to rise, it becomes harder to keep that labour theory of value in check. And so when we think about this mega trend, we need to think about ways that we can do things that aren't reliant on cheap labour and cheap money, or rethink what this post-industrial economic world looks like. And again, we can start to see some reasons for the adoption of a lot of the services and technologies that we're seeing. So automation, for example, has always been a wonderful technology that we've sort of heard more and more about over the last couple of years. But increased automation is a requirement from a number of perspectives. One, the technology environments that we're responsible for managing today, or even the business environments, forget technology, are so much more complex than they were even just a couple of years ago. But for most of us in our businesses, we have the same sort of labour pool or resources to manage that complexity. And it's becoming harder and harder and harder. And so automating that sheer complexity becomes a reason to adopt automation, as well as the fact that that cheap labour is no longer sort of available. The shift in global outsourcing, I think, is something that we'll see a lot of in this region over the next couple of years. We're keeping a really close eye on this, especially when it comes to the adoption of technologies like AI, because, for example, you know, we're already hearing stories about teams of, 100 programmers, for example, who may take 6 months to recode legacy platforms being replaced by teams of two that take 5 weeks. That sort of blows up the model of a lot of the BPO market that exists in this region. And it's not that those jobs will go away, because remembering again with that there is a skill shortage across so many technology categories. And so what this leads into is the requirement for reskilling and upskilling in some of these service providers. But when you think about some of the service providers that exist in this market, like Accenture, for example, 600,000, 700,000 employees, a lot of those are operating in that 20th century economic model. And so this transition that we're going to see over the next couple of years is really significant. And so this shift to value-added services, as we're using more automation technologies to stay in touch and continue to deliver excellent services, you want to talk about customer experience and all those sort of things, this is the foundation for delivering those sorts of programs. So that's mega trend number two, a really significant one. As money gets tight and the labour model for all this stuff changes. The third mega trend is this concept of persistent disruption. And this is the one that really starts to lead us on to the six imperatives. When you look at this slide, it's sort of, you know, when I was putting it together, it was almost a question of, you know, where was I when that happened? And I think we can all reflect on the last 20 years and probably, you know, pinpoint where we were, which city we were in, which company we were working for when these sorts of things happened. The fact is, a lot has happened on our watch in the last 20 years. And I've only really looked at the last 20 years, but you could go back 30 years, you could go back 40 years, and you would actually see that basically every year or 18 months or 2 years, there has been a disruptive global incident that has occurred. And when you see it all on one page, it really sort of makes you think about, you know, the impacts that it had. And certainly I've spent a lot of my career working for US companies but based in this region. And so when things like 9/11 happened, that was impactful for us in the Asia-Pac region because of the direct impacts of what was going on in the US. Again, the SARS outbreak was interesting and impactful because at that stage I was working in a Sydney office, but we had offices in Singapore and Malaysia and the Philippines and South Korea, and so our employees across the region were impacted, as was delivery to our clients. And then you can start to look at these other sort of examples where there has been direct impacts to not just the way of working, but also economic impacts and tourism and mass industry and supply chain and all these sorts of things. So the way to look at this trend of persistent disruption is you can look at the events, and the events are very emotive, and the events are really useful in helping us put together this picture of, you know, you were in that situation, you start to realise what your challenges were. But there's another story that underlines these events, and that is what were the changes that arose out of those events? And for each of these events that are up here, there was some form of regulatory change, or there were changes in policy. And especially for those sorts of global incidents that impacted things like, you know, financial markets, if you think about Enron's a perfect example that, you know, bought in Sarbanes-Oxley. And if you look at all the sort of financial regulations that have come in over the last 25 years, they've been driven by some chaotic, crazy, criminal sort of activity that has had this knock-on effect to a very connected planet. And so economic change, infrastructure change, and, you know, also this concept of trust. And trust, I think, is important. And a couple of years ago, we might have thought, oh, trust isn't something that really, you know, is a global thing. But I think all our trust was rocked, certainly during the COVID pandemic, as that sort of brought about unprecedented change in very fast regulatory policy and all sorts of other things. So the question for this is really, well, what are the disruption opportunities? And I think that goes to the crux of what we're talking about today. And it is this concept of what got us here isn't going to help us for the next 10 years or 20 years. And for some of you, I've sort of had the conversation about the fact that we are now in 2023, which is 23 years into the 21st century. We're all still operating like it's 1995. Like, we are operating on 20th century paradigms. And so this concept of what got us here won't get us there is something you have to take away with you today. And that's really the challenge question for, well, what is it that we have to change? And how do we do things differently? If I think about this and sort of reflect on it personally, I'm a 50-year-old Gen Xer. And if I think back to when I was a 25-year-old Gen Xer, I was looking at the 50-year-old baby boomers going, man, that guys are so smart. They know everything. They, you know, how do I get to that position and take their jobs and all the rest of it? So now that I'm 50 and I know that there's people like me who are 25 and younger, and my son and his friends are perfect examples who are sort of in the same industry but just sort of coming up, I'm wondering if they're thinking about eating my lunch from a career perspective. And I think we can think about that from a business perspective and an industry perspective about what are the changes that next generation are already thinking about moving forward. They're not thinking like it's 1990 or the 2000s, and there a lot of them aren't even thinking about those mega trends from the last 10 years because they've been protected from it by their parents and their workplaces and all those sorts of things. But that's changing now. So the things we're talking about today are happening on our watch, and it's important for us to have a framework to move forward with that. So when you think about each of these mega trends and you think about, you know, where you were or the role you were playing, one commonality certainly for me was in each of those situations, what I needed personally and what I saw from a company-wide perspective or from a government perspective or from a news media perspective is that everybody was looking for a playbook. Nobody had any answers. And so the concept of thinking about this new normal within a framework of a critical incident response framework becomes really important. And I think that starts to give us some clues into how to move forward. And so this concept is something that we're calling resilient adaptation. So think about that as a thinking model or a strategic framework for how we can start to do things differently moving forward. Now, what we then did was to say, okay, if we are in a world of constant disruption, and if these things are going to continue to happen and these other trends that are occurring are fundamentally unpicking the platforms on which we've built everything till now, surely there must be some learnings. And so we picked apart the last 20 years of these global incidents, and we've thought about them in the context of this digital data black hole that is consuming everything. And we've thought about it in the context of, 21st century economics. And as it turns out, regardless of what the incident is, there are these six commonalities, these six imperatives, which are consistent across every single incident that has disrupted the way we do business and create laws and deliver services right across the world. And that is, when something happens, there is a surge in demand. Now, whether it is for raw resources or products like toilet paper. Anyone, any other country have a run on toilet paper? Or is that just an Australian thing? Like that, you know, it's just an example, a very simple example. Services that we see, whether it's driven by panic or the lack of a playbook or the lack of knowing what's coming tomorrow on, you know, day two or week two or month two, we see a massive surge in demand on the traditional requirements of the business. The second thing is that there is a massive amount of very fast information that gets pushed out. But what's important is there is both true information and false information. So this concept of an information deluge and an inability to distinguish right from wrong. And again, sort of telling us that, well, what is the right playbook for this situation when I'm hearing this from this perspective and this from this perspective? And again, we've all lived this over the last couple of years. The requirement to increase remote operations is not just a business continuity thing, but also, you know, the ability to make sure that staff have the capability to continue to work and that we can continue to deliver services. The exploitation, one, there's always opportunists. When there is a good crisis, no one likes to waste a good crisis, and certainly, a lot of businesses. You know, we're not just talking about cybersecurity. If we think about exploitation in terms of demand, for example, those sorts of things occur. And the uncontrolled escalation is something that's different from surging demand, because the uncontrolled escalation says that we start to get a grip on the initial thing that pushed us into this position to have to react, but then something changes. There was a variant in a virus, or something somewhere along the supply chain went missing. And so this escalation is this concept of there's been an amplification of the magnitude of the problem, and it just went from being this big to this big, and then it exponentially grows and spreads. And then finally, this concept of disrupted supply, which I won't talk about too much other than to say we all know how important supply chains now are in the world. And again, I would take you back to some of those trends that we spoke about, where the supply chains, based on the pure economics of the way a region like Asia runs and how it connects to other major economic centres around the world, becomes a really important consideration. And I will leave that conversation to my learned friend, Dr. Koshik, to talk about next. So if we think about resilient adaptation as this strategic framework to carry us forward, then where does that leave us with concepts like digital transformation and sustainability? Certainly as analysts and advisors and management consultants, we still, you know, every day of every week there are conversations about digital transformation strategies and sustainability strategies. And I guess the question is, we would start to think that those things need a broader context, because, you know, what is a digital transformation strategy without a broader destination? Like, and so in terms of our own methodology, we see digitization as only really the ticket to entry these days, you know, and so on that you would seek to build optimized businesses or transform businesses or innovative businesses. But again, all those things within the context of this new operating model, not in the way that we used to do things, but in this concept of this resilient adaptation framework. And similarly, what is a sustainability agenda without a more tangible operational framework? And so when you start to think about sustainability, I would encourage you to think about sustainability in the context of those six battlefronts, because that's what is really important for carrying us forward. So the other thing that these six imperatives give us is a wonderful framework upon which to overlay the technologies of the day. There's a lot of experience in this room, and there have been lots of technologies and lots of trends that have emerged over the last 30 years as sort of enterprise computing has really sort of become the business as usual model. And so I think it's really important for us to understand when we're thinking about where these emerging technologies and solutions and services fit, you know, do they have a home in some of these imperatives, which helps us think about either the use of them within our organisation or the use of them within within our ability to deliver services to our customers. So many of you in the room come from the supplier side of the market, and for you it's important to know that all your solutions have a place in this sort of resilient adaptation framework. Whether they are legacy technologies, and I haven't really included too many of those up there, or whether they sort of are emerging. The other consideration equally is that there is great business context for the resilient adaptation framework. And so equally, if you are thinking about industry-focused solutions, they also align really well with the framework in a way where there is a language that is common to both the business executives and the technology executives. And this becomes important because if we go back to Megatrend 1, then that talked about the disruptive opportunity that the CIO is no longer just the procurement focus for a lot of organisations. And so here, and you'll need to get a copy of these slides so you can sort of step through them, but from a healthcare perspective, and health is a challenge statement for every country in this region for many different reasons, and so you can sort of step through that when you get these slides. Equally, manufacturing, again, I will leave this to Kaushik to run through. But if you're thinking about, you know, for me, I know many of you in this room, and or for those that mightn't be in the room, when you think about the hyperscalers and the services that are being provided, if you think about the industry clouds that are being presented to clients in specific industries, and so, you know, there's Microsoft industry clouds, and there's Oracle industry clouds, and there's Salesforce industry clouds, and there's IBM industry clouds, and everyone's got an industry cloud. I would sort of position that this sort of framework gives a new lease of life to the positioning of those industry clouds, which may have, you know, yes, provide wonderful technology stacks and solutions, but again, within what context? Are they within the context of the way we used to do business or the way we need to do business moving forward? And finally, just a financial example there as well. The final one to talk about is really just to give an example of how this can be used as an architectural framework for something like cybersecurity. So again, whether you're thinking about this in the context of business or technology, I wanted to put this up here because what it talks to is sort of the final key to understanding these six imperatives, and that is that you cannot focus on one in isolation of the other. And so like any good architectural model, What's important is that they are interrelated, because remembering these six imperatives are common to every incident that has occurred. And it's not that that one occurred in that global incident and that imperative occurred in those three. These six occurred in every single global incident over the last 20 years. And so that gives you fresh perspective to know that you have to answer all of them, not one of them, not two of them, not three of them. And so, again, cybersecurity gives a great example of where, you know, impact on supply chains and demand or remote operations and escalation become really important. And so there was just like six examples of how these things hang together. But that's the sort of key takeaway, that we can't think about these things in isolation. And finally, of course, resilient adaptation is born from a critical incident response mindset, but it is going to come to represent a new business as usual. Like, it will represent a new norm for the way that we do things. And for that to happen, obviously, it needs to be embedded into the organisation. And so what it requires is a rethink on culture and a rethink on skills and a rethink about some of these things that we always thought were optional. And I've put the remote work up there because that's a perfect example of where we're still undecided as a planet whether people should work from home or they should come back to the office. And I think in here lies some of the answers to those questions, again, framed in a strategic perspective. And finally, it's really difficult to predict trends, you know, especially technology trends. I mean, there's really rich people working for venture capitalists in the US who always seem to pick the right trends, but like for the average person it's hard, right? But what we can know from our past is that history is a great teacher, and we know that over the next 5 years and 10 years there will be more of these incidents. And so the question is, how will you respond? Like, how will your businesses respond and build strategies and deliver operations that are resilient enough to do it? So, you know, here are some ones that are absolutely likely to happen, are already happening or starting to happen. There are others which aren't up there. You know, one of the ones that Elon Musk likes to talk about is this this impending doom of depopulation that we're going to face. Well, in the context of the planet, that would be a really significant event. Others up there might be, there's lots of conversations around how our 21st century lifestyle is becoming very sedentary and sort of the knock-on effects that it's having to our healthcare systems that are already under pressure, and so we start to sort of see the unpacking of some of those things. We need to resist the urge to panic, but again, I sort of will take you back to choose one of those incidents from the last 20 years and put yourself back in that meeting room or that boardroom where all you wanted was a playbook. History's actually shown us the answers to what this needs to look like moving forward, but not in isolation of thinking about the fundamental economic models and the fundamental technology trends of unified digital realities that exist. So they're the three things together that we need to talk about. I will leave this here other than to say, you know, looking ahead, this is a space that we are continuing to dive deep into. So this session was a deeper dive into where we left off last time, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you again as we continue to iterate this out across our advisory and consulting practices. And with that, I will say thank you, and I hope you've managed to get through most of your breakfast. And at this point, I will hand it over to Dr. Koshik to take you through a deeper dive into supply chain. So thank you.